Last the trades of 2016, man.
Yeah,
we did it. We've been doing this show for a long time now. I mean, not a long time relative to, like, geological time, right? But we're pretty good at this now.
I say we've put in, like, 500 of the 1,000 hours.
Yeah, so. Yeah, and that's how it works. If you're working on something to be really good at it, but there's two of you, you have it. That's why partner figure skating is so much easier and not also really hard.
Work together, everybody. It will cut the time in half.
That's the real reason for teamwork, is you only have to put in half as much fucking effort.
Ugh.
There is no try in team. That's what I always say.
There is a T.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah, that's why you only have to work about a third as hard, because there's the T from try, but not the rye. Okay, cool. We talked about doing this as a sort of a wrap-up best of stuff we read in 2016 list. I say stuff we read because absolutely not a best of new comics of 2016, because I don't know what the fuck came out in 2016. What came out in 2016? Island? Some of Island? Did Island start in 2015 or 2016? Doesn't even matter. Doesn't even matter. The point is, we don't know what happened in 2016, and neither do you. Everybody in 2016 was, I think, too focused on the brutal, constant onslaught of real life misery That creates an artificial distinction between media and real life, which I don't necessarily think is sustainable, but just the constant hellhole of social and political just blow after blow to everybody's well-being. So who fucking knows what came out this year? So we're just going to talk about some shit that we happened to read. Some of it may have come out in 2016. Some of it did not. It's good.
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, if it came out in 2016, it's probably bad.
Okay, I wasn't necessarily going to go that far, but yeah, that seems fair.
It was a cosmic tragedy, pretty much, for a good half of this year.
Yeah, just the whole thing. Blow after blow after blow. So, This is going to be our nod to listicle format, right? At least in part, because that's much easier for me to write up. So if we're thinking about me making my deadlines for when we write about comics, lists! I'm pretty unapologetic on that count. So I guess, do you want to, I'll say a comic I liked, and then I'll talk about it, and you can also talk about it if you have opinions or questions, and then you say a comic that you liked, and then vice versa, and so on until we're done saying comics.
Tell me your comics.
Okay, I don't think we've talked about this one on the show, actually, although I liked it a lot when I got it. Liz Suburbia's Cyanide Milkshake. It's a mini comic, so I don't have all of them. It's a series. But I picked up a couple when I was buying, something from Silver Sprocket, I guess. Silver Sprocket being a distributor, mostly. I think I picked up issues, 7 and 8, maybe? Anyway, it is so good. It's a little bit old school zine-y in that it's kind of a collection of just different Liz Suburbia-y stuff she's done, black and white, contains both, like, shorter comic stories, excerpts of an ongoing story, and then a couple of pages of just, she wanted to talk about the Animorphs. I think in number 8, there's, a like a really heartfelt sort of letter to the audience kind of a deal. It feels very old school zany. Her drawing is super, super good. It just absolutely every time I love it. She's funny. She writes with what I have previously described as a heartbreaking punk earnestness, intriguing punk cynicism. Like, she straddles that line really well. She does some good jokes. And every time I read anything by Liz Suburbia, I want to self-publish or start a band, which I'm never going to go through with either of those probably, but that's kind of the, it's super good and I love it. And in one of them, she does some Animorph jokes and she knows that Tobias is the best Animorph, which is objectively true. Cause he was a sad hawk man with family problems who turned into a hawk and lived in a tree. And that's pretty punk as well. So Cyanide Milkshake. Super, super good. I think also starting pretty promisingly with a comic that actually came out in 2016, Cyanide Milkshake number 8. So you can get those through Zap Books, or through Chat Books, which I always say Zap initially because I'm a moron, but Chat Books, super, super good. Liz Suburbia forever.
She's been on the show a few times in passing mention.
Quite possibly. I think I talked about, and if I didn't, I should have, Sacred Heart, her enormous fucking post-apocalyptic, but maybe it's not the whole world in an apocalypse, teen rom-com. Yeah, super, super good. I love that shit. I think I like Cyanide Milkshake even more. I might like it even more. Because... even though Sacred Heart is really beautifully done and really sort of complete as a text, I just fucking love three... I mean, they're fucking $3 Cyanide Milkshakes. And they're beautiful and compact and just everything that I like about comics and zines in one little package. So, yeah, I loved Sacred Heart. I especially love Cyanide Milkshake.
Nice.
Yeah. So, what's your... I'm not necessarily doing this in a, like, favorite to least favorite, or, like, least favorite to favorite order. This is just, like, this is... because they're all good. But what's your first thing that you loved from 2016?
I think I'm gonna go with Paper Girls.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Paper Girls has been pretty solid for me. It's got sci-fi. It's got a lot of time travel.
You do love time travel.
I do love time travel. It's like one of my favorite... it's one of my favorite things. Just the thought of being able to go back and just do it again.
That's appropriate for a year-end roundup. Do you want to go back and relive 2016?
I was going to do 2016 all over again. I just want to hear Trump is the president every day. A weird Groundhog Day.
Oh, God. Imagine living fucking November 8th as your Groundhog Day. Let's go through that just before the end nightmarishness until we can solve it and get HRC elected the first, like, correct time. The first... until we can get it right.
I have to find a groundhog.
Yeah, you gotta go to the Rust Belt, find a groundhog, and get that groundhog elected president. Okay, so Paper Girls, who's it by and what's its fucking deal?
Paper Girls is...
I feel like you've talked about it on here before, but I could not tell you anything that you've said about it. Sorry, I'm the worst.
No, memories are hard.
Wow, that's the truest shit you've ever said. Memories are hard.
Well, especially when you have... I think both of us are very scatterbrained. But regardless, Paper Girls is by Brian K. Vaughan, and the artist, I don't think it's switched. It should still be Cliff Matt Wilson and Cliff Chiang? Cliff Chi? I can't. I'm going to fuck up his name. But essentially, Paper Girl starts off with this girl having a dream about an astronaut with angel wings telling her that everything's fucked up and you have to take this. And she starts her first paper route and then somehow gets involved in a crazy post-apocalyptic war with like old people and young people. It's a great 80s movie. If an 80s movie took itself seriously, is what I...
I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but I think most 80s movies took themselves fairly seriously. It's just with the mercy of distance, we've been able to mock them pretty roundly.
Well, you're telling me that, I'm trying to think of it. Like, Ferris Bueller's Day Off is a serious movie.
No, but, like, I cannot imagine... That's a comedy. I thought you meant, like, the 80s action movies, like fucking War Games or whatever, which are sort of lightly comedies, but also, are less cheesy than we now think of them as being, or, like, weren't meant to be as cheesy as we think of them as being.
Okay, yeah, I get that.
Like, the way that Transformers... is funny, but we're also not supposed to think of it primarily as a comedy.
Transformers of the 80s is a very serious and sad movie about Optimus Prime giving his life for the good of the Autobots.
Okay, so you're saying that Paper Girls reminds you of Ferris Bueller's Day Off, but serious?
yeah, kind of. It's way better than Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It's just sort of like it starts off very kitschy, an 80s movie, and like, I'm gonna find myself, and then she does end up finding herself, but through another era of time.
Okay. that's, I mean, like, the future, or like, because I feel like, I don't know. Anyone who finds themselves by traveling back to the past, I'm pretty suspicious about, because the past always sucked.
No worries there. It is the future.
Thank God. Yeah. So, what do you like about it?
I think the art's really good. The art is very pretty, and it's sort of like, it looks like it's water print. That's not the technical term. It looks like it's watercolor. The story is so-so, but I think the characters are good, though.
By all means.
This one girl smokes cigarettes because she's the tough one.
Very and then movie.
Their future self, the future gang gaggle comes up, and she's like, oh, where am I? And then they're like, oh, you're dead from cigarette smoke. Died of cancer. And she's just like, what?
Yeah.
I thought that was great for me.
So your favorite, let me make sure I understand this. Your favorite part about this comic is that a girl dies of cancer.
The interplay. But yes.
So I looked at pictures to see why you would say that it looks watercolory. It does not, but it does have a really interesting color palette.
Do you get where I was coming from?
Not really. Sort of I do insofar as it's a faded pastel color palette. Watercolor... It does not have the texture of watercolor painting. Like, it's not going for any of that painterly look, but it is for sure using colors in a mostly a cool tone, and then mostly either faded or pastel, and there's a decent amount of blending between colors in backgrounds for artistic effect.
You nailed it. Yeah.
Which, I mean, maybe I'm completely wrong and it's actually done in watercolor, but it would be hard to get textures that kind of flat on characters doing watercolor. It looks like it's colored digitally, I think. Anyway, okay, yeah, so you like that a kid dies of cancer and that it's kind of like an 80s movie, but serious.
Yes.
It does have some really fucking 80s looking costumes. And I say costumes because anyone who's dressed like it's the 80s looks costumey. It is impossible to play the 80s straight. Okay, do you have anything else that you want to say about it? I do like that our first two, we've come out strong with, like, post-apocalyptic girl stories. Although Liz Suburbia's is not only post-apocalyptic. And Paper Girls is just by men. So, an interesting sort of theme and contrast there.
Who does it better?
Women.
That was very short.
No men have ever done anything. I was considering saying worthwhile, but I think I just like trailing off there. Like, men have never done anything.
You gotta take the hard line on the Canadian. just the hardest line you can.
It's fine. I don't hate men. I just, you know, I don't approve of their lifestyle choice.
Just an active distrust. An active distrust and non-pulsed.
Non-plussed?
Non-plussed? Is that what it is?
Because non-pulsed would mean they don't have a pulse. Non-plussed is, like, a little confused.
Yes.
Okay. Because non-pulsed, I'm not gonna murder men. I should edit this, because I have been listing that I do the trades on grad school applications as my, like, hobby and or interest, and I can't have misandry.
I don't see why not, but I am a fan of chaos.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, so, I don't know, do you have closing thoughts on Paper Girls and or the works of Brian K. Vaughan?
Brian K. Vaughan is a talented premise writer, but the execution of his stories are often a wank fest.
Ha! That's the truest shit I've ever heard.
But yeah. I like Paper Girls. I think it's better than a lot of his other stuff.
One of his better wank fests.
Yes.
Okay, the next comic that I want to talk about is actually a webcomic. And it is one I don't think I've ever talked about on here before, but I do occasional desperate tweet storms about to try to get literally any other person on this earth to like it as much as I do. But it's not likely. It's a super long-running sitcom webcomic. I think the first rip was in 2005, and it's changed a lot since then. But Multiplex by Gordon McAlpin it sort of snuck up into being one of my favorite comics sometime in the last, like, three-ish years, and I've been reading it since, like, 2006. So the fact that it's not, I mean, not to cast too much shade, right? But questionable content. I still read just because I've always fucking read it. And I don't like it really at this point. That's not to say that it hasn't taken some interesting turns or whatever. It's just no longer a comic that's like relevant to me in any way. But Multiplex, I was sort of reading out of habit for a while, but then it hooked me right back in. And it's sort of a sitcom, dramedy, fictional slice of life about a group of friends who work at a movie theater in Chicago. And you've seen them sort of grow up from being super obnoxious talking heads, like talk shit about movies, drawn very clumsily in vector to a much more expressive, still vector drawn, style. And the characters have, it happens mostly in real time. So when we met all the characters, they were about 17, 18. So they were older than me when I started reading it in 2006. And now they're like human adults who are like settling down and having career ambitions. And you sort of watch them struggle through that, like rather than seeing them smoothly mature and then just somehow they've ended up in a different place. You got to watch them explicitly deal with, like, how they felt about their potentially dead-end jobs and make bad choices as a result. McAlpin writes strong dialogue in a way that's kind of special in a sitcom, and especially a sitcom that's sort of started out about young people. Like, his characters are friends, and the ways that they give each other shit and are sometimes awful to each other and make sort of inappropriate jokes at each other, but also sort of settle down on that as they age, has been really delightful to read. And then interspersed with that, because when I got back into it at first, I was just in it for the rom-com dramedy aspect, where I was like, these characters, they should date, which is the worst thing about me as a person. So I'll get too invested in that.
You get caught in the will they won't they.
Yeah, it's bad. It's super shit. And they have this long, slow burn where two of the main characters, Becky and Jason, had been best friends, and then they'd had crushes on each other, but not at the same time, and then they were mad at each other, and then they were dating other people, and it was that kind of thing, and then they got together, and it was like, yes! But also, interspersed with that stuff that sort of, admittedly brought me back into sort of caring about it more than just reading it, lazily, and in with that characterization of these fucking nerdy dweebs growing up and solving their interpersonal shit badly, and sometimes well. McAlpin also has his characters, like, super fucking passionate and argumentative about movies. McAlpin writes his characters super invested in comics, and not comics, Jesus, movies, and, like, writes them arguing about movies and talking about movies all the time, and you can sort of feel the, I don't know, the love for the fucking art form and the attention to like, what makes a story successful, because he's into storytelling in a way that I only sometimes am, but, like, what makes a piece of art successful is sort of an ongoing concern in this. It's been fun reading something that's, like, both a pretty fun sitcom and also sometimes pretty fun art criticism. So, yeah, and it's coming to an end. I don't know if it's this year or sometime in the middle of next year, but it's, like, winding down. It's on its last couple story arcs. And that's gonna be super weird. It was, like, maybe the... it was one of the earliest webcomics I ever fucking got into. So, super, super weird. But also, it's a good comic, and I think more people should read it. McAlpin has a diverse cast, and he writes them diversely and with diverse interests, and I like it. It's good. The end.
Multiplex.
Yep.
Get it on the internet.
Yeah. That was sort of a meandering, repetitive thing, but it good.
What is your... So, it's always interesting to me when a story follows characters from, like, adolescence to adulthood. Do you think these characters change, or do they become more, like, jaded? Or is there a development of character, or is it just they get old?
Well, like I said, they do change a lot. And they deal a lot with their personal growth explicitly. So it's not just they change, it's that they talk about changing and they experience sort of milestone moments in their lives in the kind of explicit way that I think real people often do. Although I don't think similarity to real people is at any point a necessary thing for comics to have or whatever, but yeah, it's pretty explicit the ways that they're negotiating the road to genuine adulthood. I think all of the main characters except for one of them, Kurt, who's like the goofy one, to borrow the archetype, has an explicit moment where they look at their life and their job in the movie theater and their career aspirations or lack thereof, and they go, what am I doing right now? Seeing them figure out what, in fact, they're doing right now and seeing them explicitly decide how to move forward or feel really bad that they're not moving forward or spin their wheels and then spin their wheels about spinning their wheels has been good. And I mean, because it happens mostly either in real time or not like a strip corresponds to one day, but there'll be jumps to catch up if he takes a long time on one particular story arc. So obviously this will happen extremely slowly, but it's one of the few comics where I've like gone back and read the archives a bunch of times, perhaps too often. And their arcs as characters shows up a lot more that way. There's like more than 1,000 comics though, so it takes a while.
And you say my mangas are long.
Well, your mangas are long. this is on the 9th book and 41st chapter, and there are how many fucking volumes of Naruto or whatever?
Next question. A lot. There are a lot.
Yeah. There are too many. That's my hot take. Okay, yeah, so that's that one. So what comic did you get a fucking lot out of in your life? I need to stop shorting so much. What comic did you like this year besides Paper Girls?
Naruto.
Are you shitting me?
No, seriously. I'm gonna keep it on the webcam train, I think.
Webcomic train.
I'm just thinking about it, and it's okay.
Okay.
Webcomic train. This is one you showed me, actually. Halloween. I thought Halloween was pretty good.
Oh, The Last Halloween?
Yes. There it is.
By Abby Howard.
Yeah, I like that. It was that good mix of like cute and horrifying that I love so much.
Yeah, that is definitely the Aaron Lurish brand, I think. do you want to talk a little bit about what it is and like why you like it?
I like the art a lot. I'm not really an art person usually, but I like the jumps from sort of a gangly, weird, almost, who was the dude that did Invader Zim?
Vasquez.
I like sort of his style into ultra-detailed monsters. I like those jumps a lot.
yeah, it changes in style pretty significantly, I think, as it runs, which is fun.
Yeah. I like that it's goofy. I like that it's an adventure story, which there needs to be more of. It's not just people blabbing about their problems. There's actual steps taken to try and solve it.
You are absolutely right. People do take concrete steps to try to solve the fact that monsters are trying to kill everyone. None of this walk and talk down a hallway for these guys.
No talking about, well, there won't they? There are too many monsters for that. She is a child, and that's gross.
I realize you mean that in the sense of it would be gross to, well, they or won't they about a child, but it makes it sound like you just think kids are gross, that it's just gross to be a child.
It is.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, do you have other thoughts on that?
The monsters are great.
Yeah.
She has good monsters.
True facts. Okay, the next comic I have on my list, and I'll try to be a little briefer on this one, is Limonchik by Mikkel Sommer, which we talked about on another episode. I think this might have been a reread for me in 2016. I'd have to check when it came out. But it's the one about how Laika, the space dog, comes back to Earth for revenge. It's beautiful. It's so good. It's a mini Kuge, the Latvian publisher. I've never actually picked up one of their full Kuge magazines. I just get the mini Kuges, which are by one author, rather than the magazines that are sort of organized around one subject. Partly because the mini Kuges are much easier impulse buys, because they're pretty small and they're pretty cheap, and you kind of know what you're getting into if you just flip through it a little bit. But it's a great series. I like all the ones I've picked up from them, but Limonchik is so good. It's pretty. It's funny. It's so funny. And it's about a dog, and the world blows up. Perfect.
Does the dog come out? Does Laika get to do what she sets out to do?
I mean, yeah, she gets to destroy the world.
That's a perfect comic.
Yeah, it's ideal. it literally could not be any better. Do you have another comic that you liked?
I really like Doctors by Dash Shaw.
Oh, hell yeah! I didn't read that one, but Dash Shaw is great.
Doctors is about a clinic, sort of, that's set up where you, if you have enough money, you can set up the afterlife you want. So when someone's dying, they just go into one of those weird machines. And I get to live technically, but they're living in a virtual world.
Isn't that an episode of Black Mirror as well?
Yes.
Yeah, it's the gay one.
I hope this came first.
I'm sure it did. Anyway, yeah, so people can buy their own kind of afterlife. Talk me through how this is administered in the story. Like, how is the book set up to tell you about this shit?
So, it starts off with a, lady reminiscing about, like, climbing a tree when she's younger. And she sort of goes around living her day, and she slips and bangs her noodle, And it's sort of a mystery if she's alive or so. I still don't fully understand how it works to be 100, but it's like your body gets set up on one of those. It's like a spaghetti bowl, but with wires coming out of it into a machine. So it's like your brain is hooked up to a computer that sets up your ideal afterlife and makes it seem as though your life is continuing on. And it's about this woman who orders an afterlife because she knows that she's dying, but she becomes upset when she realizes that that's not her real life. And then it switches to the doctors who are administering the afterlife procedure and about how they came up with it, how it's affected their own views on life. And there's a good, like, daughter-father thing in there, too, that I'm not going to spoil.
Okay. So what were you... What do you like about it?
The use of coloring is great. It's a... Dashaw's a great artist. And each page is a different color. Like, each page in the one I have is, like, you have a page that's... The color of the paper is blue, and then the next page will be green, and then it'll go to purple. And I love the way he draws everything, and his drawing is very blunt. I can't think of a better way to put it.
I actually think that is a great description for Dashaw's drawing. That pause makes me feel like I'm a little too harsh on your usual descriptions of art.
No. I just don't... It's one of the few comics this year that actually left me affected. And which is hard, because usually I'm empty. So... that was a nice surprise.
I think Dashaw does comics for empty people. I think all of Dashaw's comics... And I mean, I haven't read all of them, so I don't know, maybe he has one that's like fucking Bob Ross fanfic or whatever. But most of his comics are about people who are a little empty, and he doesn't, you know, they don't really get any better for the most part. Like, Bottomless Belly Button is not a redemption story. Even if things come to a conclusion, and even if things end up emotionally changing... people still are, problems havers, so.
Yeah, you can't fix what's broken, but you can make it pretty.
So the next comic that I was super into, was Apocalypse Dad by Taylor Dow from Cold Cube Press, which starts out as pretty much the joke you think it would start out as, and then it just gets sad. And that's the kind of joke that I like the most. So there's a dad, and it's the apocalypse, and this dad, I think, if I recall correctly, because I got this from the library, I didn't buy it. So it has gone back to the library. It no longer resides in my home.
I'm impressed with your library.
Oh, yeah, the Portland downtown library is amazing. It has an enormous zine section. And some of it is just boring bike bullshit, but there's a lot of good mini comics there as well. It's really, really good. Presumably, because a lot of nerds donate shit to the library because we're in Portland, which is full of nerds, but I assume they're also fairly robust in seeking out... more books and shit. It's the apocalypse. There's a dad. I think he fights other dads, and he's looking for his little girl, and it's the apocalypse. And it starts out very funny because he's still doing dad shit, and it's the apocalypse, but he's wearing, like, cargo shorts, I think, and a baseball cap. But he has to, like, murder his way through a post-apocalyptic landscape while also being a stereotype about dads. It's good shit. It's, you know, it's not deep or whatever, probably, although it gets a little sad towards the tail end, but mostly it's just executing the shit out of a joke, and that's what I love.
Nice.
Yeah. So...
Got me at Apocalypse Dad.
I think... Out of the stuff we've talked about in this show so far, one of them hasn't been about the apocalypse or death. Yeah. Multiplex. Everything else that we've talked about has been just the apocalypse.
No.
Well, Doctors is just about death. But, yeah, everything else either includes... Oh, wait, no, I forgot about Paper Girl. Nope, you said that one's post-apocalyptic-y. So, yeah, no, all of it.
I have one that's gonna... My next favorite is gonna knock that argument apart.
Go for it.
Jonesy.
Oh! Hell yeah! I was not expect... That's kind of left field. I was not expecting that.
Well, I have depth.
Okay, I never said you didn't. I just didn't think you, like, end of the year liked it. I thought you liked it but weren't, like, bonkers over it. But hell yeah, Jonesy. We both loved that comic. Talk about that.
Jonesy is a delightful comic by one Sam Humphries.
And, the artist who is equally important is Caitlin Rose Boyle.
I do not know of their work beyond Jonesy so well, but I think Jonesy is one of the more put-together comics that have come out in a long time.
I agree. Do you want to talk about what you mean by put-together?
There's a stable world that has interesting and vital characters. There's nobody that's a throwaway, which is nice. It's just fun, which is rare.
It is fun. It is hella fun. The coloring is bright and lively. Everybody's a little blob. I tweeted early on in reading it about how much I like the nubbin teeth that the characters get. Because any comic with fucking nubbin teeth is a good-ass comic.
It's true.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, it's not Shakespeare, but it doesn't need to be. And it's like, it's very knowledgeable of that, and it's sort of like, the reactions of the characters are the way that... What's her name?
Caitlin Rose Boyle?
Yeah, the way she draws the expressions of the characters does more than any amount of the dialogue in any of the new DC or Marvel prints. Yeah, it's good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It melted my heart.
Yeah, it's good fucking comics. I think it's very, very sweet. That's something that, sort of picking up on your It Melted Your Heart. It's a comic that's basically about friends and family. Like, yeah. The premise of Jonesy or whatever is Jonesy maybe has love powers. Jonesy does have love powers. Jonesy can make people love things. But it's not just like a crush-o-matic story. It's really about these kids and their families and their friendship with each other and their crushes, but like it's heavily friends and family centric, and like I feel like the emotional core of the stories is even when romance happens, people go back to their friends and their family.
That was my favorite thing. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. Not to artificially distinguish too much between love and friends and family. Like, sure, I guess you could fall in love with someone and they become your family. Sounds fake, but okay. Yeah, that shit's good as hell. I guess my next fave, and I don't remember if I mailed these to you or if I just meant to mail them to you, or what I did on that, but Tin Fam's Please Don't Give Up, numbers 1 and 2. I probably didn't mail them to you. I probably still have them somewhere. Sorry, bud. But, it's another one that's just pure delight, with a very thin coat of plot around it. It's just a punch 'em out. I've talked about it on the show before for sure, because I picked it up at Linework Northwest and was like, this is exactly what I want to fucking read forever. It's a pizza delivery guy and his pizza delivery pal, and they have to fight their way through various comedically themed brutes. And I mean, Tin Fam's art is fun and clean and serviceable. like, it's exactly it's exactly suited to the job of drawing a bunch of people having a fight in a really satisfying way. I actually have a Tin Fam poster hanging up in my living room that's just an enormous brawl, and it's about equally as satisfying as Please Don't Give Up. So, Tin Fam is just, I don't know, he really loves drawing fighting, but I really love reading him drawing fighting, so good shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your next comic that you're into?
My next comic that I'm into, I am really digging Fantasy Sports. I think Fantasy Sports is great.
Yeah, by Sam Bosma, right?
Yeah.
I think we've talked about that at least briefly on the show.
Yeah, it's just exactly what it sounds like. It's just a magic guild goes around making sure no one's messing around with magic, and they often end up dealing with the pragmatics and the rulemaking of that with sports.
It's
great, and it's funny and cute.
Hell yeah. We're probably going to have annoying typing sounds throughout all of this, because I've been trying to take notes on what you're saying, which normally I don't do. I'm just like, I can fill it in later, but I'm trying to be more diligent. But yeah, it's, who publishes that? I feel like it's,
it's not Fanta, it might be Fantagraphics.
I don't think it's Fanta. It's No Brow. Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah. It's pretty is one of the things that's true about it. Like, Sam Bosma, I mean, it's not, like, ostentatiously pretty in, like, a Marion Churchland kind of painterly way, but it's got fun shapes, and it is pleasant on the eyes.
It's like candy.
Yeah. Yes. I feel like there's some, I don't know, I feel like there's some anime comparisons that might not be necessary to make, but that I'm always tempted to make. But maybe that's just because I heavily associate dungeon questy, fantasy questy stuff with manga and anime, so that might be a personal problem.
No, it's totally in there. with the burly mustaches and the fact that they fight in a tournament to decide things.
Yeah, it's the character design of some of the fighters makes me think a little bit of kind of a 80s, 90s manga kind of look. But I mean, it's I think at this point it's inescapable to think about manga comparisons when you're talking about anything that has a fighting tournament. Whether that's fair or not, I don't know, but I think that is a comparison that's going to tend to happen. But yeah, I'm glad we're getting some fun back in here after the early post-apocalyptic theme. Okay. I guess, do you have other things you want to say about it besides funny, cute, there's a tournament?
Almost as good as Naruto.
Okay, all right. Fair fucking enough. Okay. I think maybe how many more do you have in terms of stuff you want to talk about?
There's only I do have 12, but there's not that's not really you already know them, honestly. Probably right
Yeah. We're getting close to the hour mark. So if you want to do a couple more each and then wrap it on up. And by a couple, I mean like let's see how long these take.
I have to. Well, how many do you have left?
I wrote a list of 12. I'm not married to any of them. Obviously, because you can't marry inanimate objects.
Can't.
What?
Can't you?
No. You
But all you need
can't.
is the pastor willing.
You can't legally marry them.
This is what if you got married to a person in a suit, but then it turned out you've actually just got married to the suit?
That can't happen. Legally, that will not happen.
But everybody saw it.
No, what? Okay.
Okay.
So the next comic that I really liked was Diana's Electric Tongue by Carolyn Novak.
Nice.
Which I did mail to you. I don't know if you've read it, but
It's good. I liked it.
yeah. It's really future-y. It's kind of the most classic sci-fi of anything I've read this year. I have a soft spot, maybe more than anything else, for stories about like maybe robots are people too. That's the only thing that my withered heart truly knows how to love. Because I wanted to be Data so bad as a kid. Like from Star Trek, that was my goal. Diana's Electric Tongue is a lady tries to move on after a terrible breakup, and the way that she does that is by buying a person bot, and the person bot is programmed to love her. And there's never any sort of pretense that the robot is anything other than a robot. But she sort of tries to figure out caring and being cared for sort of from square zero with this robot who has to love her and also with her friends who have mixed feelings about her basically moving a sex bot in with them. And it looks good. It's a good looking comic. The colors are fun. Sorry?
Very bright.
Yeah, brightly colored, round shapes a lot of the time, expressive faces, characters are really distinct looking. There's a lot of thought put into what the world of the future looks like in terms of everything from hairstyles to, like, furniture shapes, to clothes, and home design, but in a way that really incorporates, the world of today. Like, the main character wears athletic shorts that look really contemporary, but also, the way that furniture is drawn is sometimes a little future-y. It's all fun. Yeah. I love it. It's the kind of, world building, but not, like, wanky about it shit that I love in sci-fi.
Less wank, more sci-fi.
A fucking men. All right, yeah, that's where my comic opinions are at. Also, my opinions on all of literature.
I wish I had a robot girlfriend, or a robot friend.
Okay. All right. I don't really know what to say to help you with that one, bud.
Oh, it's not a, it's just an aside.
Okay.
You know we're going to be available by, like, 2 years for an outrageous amount of money.
I mean, anything's available to the rich, I guess. That's the future of the world.
true stuff. Only the rawest, truest comics.
fuck. Okay, what's your next comic pick?
I edited that part about the robot.
No, I'm leaving that there.
Okay.
That's, that document is going to be available to anyone who cares to research you.
Let them come. I'm going to get real passionate about this.
Okay.
I have had few comics affect me in the way that this one has.
If this is Kami-sama no Ayutore, I'm quitting the podcast forever.
It's Naruto. It's about believing in yourself.
So this is Goodnight Poon Poon, right?
I don't know why you hate Kami-sama so much. It's like, I'm gonna argue that another time.
Is it actually Kami-sama no Ayutore? Because I won't quit the podcast, but I will make fun of you.
I do love that. But it's, it's 20th Century Boys.
Oh, shit, okay.
And I do want to talk about Oyasumi Poon Poon, but that's like a few, that's a whole day for me. I need time. Also, fuzzy on it.
Yeah. Okay, so 20th Century Boys.
20th Century Boys is a masterpiece, in my opinion. I think it's possibly the most I've been engrossed with any written work in a long time. It's the use of time in it, the use of space and sort of like destination as like a key to memory, and like, who do you trust? Is your life worth the effort people put into it? Just real good. Just real good shit. And yeah. I just couldn't. I had to spread it. It's too good not to be known.
Oh, God, yeah. It's beautiful. It's a really, it's an affecting comic, and it's, there's a lot in it. Partly because it's fucking long as shit. It's like a billion volumes. But it's, you know, it's sweet, it's thoughtful, it's ridiculous. There's a lot to it.
It doesn't shy away from. So you start off. It's a story about a loser, just some dick bag that works at a convenience store and takes care of his wayward sister's kid. It spirals into, oh, someone has a personal vendetta against this guy.
Yeah.
I hate the world because this guy is the world to the villain in the story. It's literally the story about one person's obsession with this one dude and how they didn't play with. I can't say anymore. It's revenge in its purest, most thoughtless, but also it's like consuming. It's a consuming work.
Yeah. Because I wouldn't have said thoughtless, except that, I mean, maybe as an emotion, it overwhelms thought. But the dude clearly puts a lot of thought into getting his revenge.
Oh, yeah. But he puts a ridiculous amount of thought into it, but it's just, the whole time, he's just thinking about, how do I fuck with Kenji? How do I fuck this dude's day up? I don't care who else gets hurt. I just want to fuck this guy over as hard as I possibly can. And the whole world gets pulled into it. And it's great. It's also about standing up for yourself. And, like, you can depend on people, and friends are important. But at the same time, you can't just expect people to protect you, and you don't have to do anything, which is an important lesson.
Yeah, a lot of it is sort of people figuring out their personal, I don't want to say responsibilities, because it's not like it's a straightforward, like, well, you must do the thing, but it's very, like, what are one's duties towards one's friends and oneself, and the world in which one lives. How does one live honestly and ethically? What's that shit about?
It turns out you can't. Eventually you have to pick sides.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think not picking sides is intrinsic to living ethically. I certainly think picking sides is often the ethical thing to do, but perhaps one can't live simply as well as ethically.
That's real. I love it a lot. It made me cry multiple times.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Just some good-ass comics. I guess another comic that I liked a lot, continuing our second theme, which is science fiction, is Anoush Shrestha's Resident Aliens. Did I mail you that one? Did you buy that one? Have you seen that one?
I have seen that one. I have, and I believe you did. Yeah, you did send it to me.
Because it's very possible that you also bought it, because I think he exhibited at Comics Arts Brooklyn. So you could have got it independently. I could have mailed it to you. I have no idea. It's sharp little sci-fi pieces on belonging, gentrification, and invasion, but with sort of the visual metaphor of people's faces are plants now. So it's some good, I don't think it ever quite becomes body horror, because Shrestha's art is a little too, I should have looked up how to say that before doing this fucking podcast. But his line is too elegant for it to ever quite feel like body horror to me. I would compare his drawing, if I were going to compare it to anybody, which I don't know if that's fair to art or whatever, but it's maybe one part Adrian Tomei, one part Daniel Klaus, one part Phoebe Gleckner, in terms of his interest in drawing on very deadpan art, very controlled,
line work, but then also some of Gleckner's, because I think Gleckner was also interested in that, but Gleckner does a little more in the rendering than either of, like, textures especially, than either Klaus or Tomine. So, yeah. And, of course, I'm not mentioning Gleckner to not draw comparisons to some interest in medical illustration and pathologization that are there in both cases. Gleckner's drawing of... Sorry, what?
No, it's very Grey's Anatomy with the bisections and the...
Yeah. Gleckner has a sort of famous drawing of herself with a bunch of open sores, and that reminded me of Shrestha's drawing of people's fucked up faces.
Yeah.
With plant life coming out of them. Yeah, and I think while his plants are always, like, his face plants, mostly in his illustrations, and Resident Alien has a lot of those, they aren't shown in motion, but there's always the implication of the kind of horrible feeling of something growing out of flesh, a non-flesh thing growing from flesh, which is deeply horrific, and Shrestha's sort of elegant and contained drawings containing themselves, that implication of, like, plants growing out of skin is fucked up. And I know some of his other work that uses that same premise, like his comic on Study Group, which is called Genus, does have someone whose face is a plant that sort of grows and ungrows at various points, and it is deeply creepy. So...
That's where I mix those two up. I did read Resident Alien, but there's some very similar themes throughout both.
Yeah.
I thought they were the same thing.
I don't know that they are. I know that they use... I know Resident Alien sort of has some short comics and some standalone illustrations, and the standalone illustrations are of the same kind of faceplant shit. Because faceplant is, like, where you fall on your face, but in Nanu Shrestha's arts case, it's also literally your face is a goddamn plant. But that theme takes on a role in the story in Genus. But it's also just something he draws a lot of. I follow him on Tumblr, and he really loves drawing people, but bits of them are plants. Or possibly he hates it but feels compelled to do it. I don't want to speculate on his life. He seems very nice. I met him very briefly and he was very sweet in terms of, like, signing thing. I don't know. I didn't really talk to him. I'm afraid of people. But he seemed chill.
As you know, he might have seen you as a plant. Putting that out there.
Okay. I've never been mistaken for a plant. But maybe. Not outside the realm of possibility, I guess. All right, yeah. So that shit was good. You've read stuff by him before. You can attest to the fact that he draws some real good pictures.
His drawing is the bee's knees. They're very good.
Yeah.
They're all ink, and they're all... really detailed. He is not lazy, which is good.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so what else you got in your life that is a comic book?
Oh, in the book form.
Yeah, I mean, or non-book. I just don't mean what else do you have in your life, and you're going to be like, I got depression, because so do I. But I don't think that makes our year-end best of roundup. Unless your depression is the year-end best of thing that happened to you, in which case I'm sorry.
Oh, man.
Was that joke too far or hard for me to tell?
No, that was the perfect. That was just like... better than coffee. the last thing I'll talk about, or the last comic I really like, I really think he is a good boy. It's great.
Oh, hell yeah.
I keep bringing it up, but
I think we've talked about it every show since you found it, yeah.
I think it's you know when you see a somebody doing really good and you also watch them train, that's like I saw that progression in Casey Green with this. It's good. It's like some of his best. I think it's some of his best work.
Yeah, I agree, actually. Although I was probably not a comparable fan. But yeah, no, I also think it's good and outstanding as far as a more elegant realization of some of the same stuff that was there in Gun Show.
Yeah. Gun Show was like a hot mess, just like gross and dirty. And this is like he is a good boy is a mess and it's dirty, but it's like way, way more fun.
It's a little bit less generally anarchic than Gun Show, at least in part because it's telling a story that unfolds in a particularly structury way. Although it does, have certain themes of stalling out and not going anywhere with your life. But it's definitely more controlled than Gun Show was, or at least, I don't know, that's probably ultimately meaningless to say about a work of art, but it definitely feels more pointed sometimes.
Oh, man. It's, it works out really well, and I think Krang's one of the more interesting characters I've seen this year in terms of his journey from, like, just fucking lethargic asshole to an even more lethargic asshole with, like, some potential for good qualities.
I feel like he's gone from sort of lethargic to constantly in crisis. Like, he's still kind of lazy and doesn't want to do stuff, but it's usually in a way that's really, because his safety net of living inside his tree or whatever has gone away, he's just constantly experiencing crises in a much more public way.
Yeah. I love the reluctance. The reluctance to fulfill one's destiny or to at least do something. I'm indecisive.
Mm.
And it's nice to see an indecisive person be the hero. He's really, really bad at it.
Yeah, that's fair. I think it has a little bit in common with 20th Century Boys that way. I mean, and it's kind of funny that they both have boy in the title that way, because neither one is a traditional coming-of-age story where a child comes of age into manhood. They ain't no Buildings Roman type shit. In one of them, he's already an adult, albeit we think a young adult, and just kind of spins his fucking misery wheels a lot. And in 20th Century Boys, they're all definitely adults, but they do sort of late in life come around to doing some personal growth, although never cleanly and never absolutely. So, Yeah, that's, I guess, our other theme.
not coming around to your full potential.
Sci-fi and post-apocalyptic and coming-of-age stories that aren't quite.
what a year.
Yeah, what a fucking year. I guess the other
The other theme is maybe just violence. I feel like we did talk about just some bad things in these. I don't know. Jonesy doesn't really have much violence in it. So they're not perfect themes, but.
Violence is up there, though.
Yeah.
I think gets punched in the face in Jonesy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, in that case.
Like a hair punch of some kind.
You know, some punching happens. Yeah, what a fucking year, though. We talked about a lot of comics. We both read a lot more comics than we even talked about on here. Do you have, I guess, one comic that you're really excited about for 2017, or do we want to do that for the January show and stretch out our foray into the listicle format for as many months as possible?
Let's stretch.
Yeah.
I think we should even do, like, the last, because you have more and I have more of our favorites of 2016. And then the next episode could be a look back at 2016.
Oh my god. Do send me that list, though, of other ones you have, because I'll put them into the write-up. I don't want to do too many listicle episodes, because I'll probably get bored of listicles. But do send me the rest of them, either here or in Skype chat or in a text, so that I can put them in the list.
Okay.
Do you have any closing 2016 thoughts? I do have a favorite album that I got into in 2016 because of comics. Because Ben Snakepit, who does an autobio comic, is in this band, and I looked it up to see if he's any good or if he was just doing band practice and sucked, but it turns out they're actually really, really good. So that is a gift that comics gave me in 2016.
Nice.
Yeah. Just best of bands I got into through comic books in 2016. Very specific, best comics ancillary thing to happen because of comics in 2016. Do you have final 2016 thoughts for this podcast? I mean, presumably you're going to investigate 2016 in your own life somewhere else, but maybe not. If you just want to talk about the year in general, that's also fine.
I'm just going to sleep for 4 years.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have a thing that comics also showed me.
Uh-huh.
That I liked.
Yeah.
Comics sort of reminded me how much I enjoy. Oh, actually, the comics sort of reminded me how much I enjoy reading.
That's real. That's super fucking real.
And I, after reading, what was it? 20th Century Boys, I was just sort of like, there's a lot of references to things and movements I didn't even know about, so I got to researching, and I was like, damn, the world is a big place.
Man, yeah, true, real.
Oh, there's a Kami-sama no Itori movie.
Okay, well, that's the end of the trade's best of 2016. Thanks for listening, everybody. I love you. Be safe. Goodbye.